Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability.
Disrespect welcomes Gaetan Heroux, a Toronto housing worker and activist and a member of OCAP, to discuss poverty, criminalization of the poor, the role of agencies, the opportunities for social resistance, and the fundamental role of housing, income, and employment in these issues. Gaetan, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing, Jeff?
Good. We spoke about housing and employment as the chicken and the egg problem, or housing and income amounts to the same thing, that without adequate income, you can't get decent housing. Without housing, it's difficult to establish for a long time a decent income. We also saw that there seems to be an issue in East Downtown Toronto, especially around the city's mandate to maintain social housing and the need to increase it. Do you want to explain to a listener how you see this issue of dispersal of housing emerging and how it affects these other issues?
Yeah, I'll take the long way around a little bit in terms of the neighborhood that I'm talking about. East Downtown Toronto has a long, long history. The emergence of Toronto, or the existence of Toronto, is actually connected to this neighborhood. York, actually, the town of York, was almost at the foot, just a little bit to the west of where we are by the lake.
Oh.
And over the years, these issues have been ongoing. So by the time that you get to the present period, where right now if you go to the Dundas and Sherbourne area, in and around that area, there's been a whole infrastructure of services that has been established over decades and decades for poor people or people who came to the city trying to establish themselves, that go as far back as the Irish who fled the famine in 1847. So today you have up to 2,000 hostel beds in and around the area. Services that have been established, been there, some of them like the Fred Victor Mission or Fred Victor Center now, that's been there for over 100 years. And other services, like the one I work with right now, Street Health, has been there about over 25 years. The All Saints Church, which is right at the corner of Dundas and Sherbourne, I think has been offering services to what they used to call Skid Row individuals since the 1970s. There are also soup kitchens. There are legal services, health services, that all in that area. It's also the home of Regent Park, which is right now in the middle of being bulldozed over. And there are a number of large social housing projects that are in the area, so Moss Park being one of them, Regent Park again, to the north, St. Jamestown, and there are others along that way. Unfortunately, as we speak, there's a gentrification. Actually, I like some friends in Montreal have a much better term, which is
bourgeoisement. Yeah. So making middle class.
Yes. So what we've seen over the past, actually since the 1970s, we've seen upper middle class, young professionals coming in and buying up houses in a neighborhood that traditionally, for instance, have been flop houses or rooming houses, and a lot of them have since disappeared, and now we are seeing just to the south of Queen, large condo developments that you can see from Dundas and Sherbourne. People have to understand we're just 5 minutes away from Dundas and Sherbourne, which is the heart of the commercial, you know,
and where you manage the drop-in too.
And we're just like 5 minutes away from the drop-in, yes. So
yep.
So there's all these things that are going on, and also the waterfront, by the way. I don't know if people have heard, but there's big plans for the waterfront in terms of, at one time they want to bring the Olympics in that area. So all those pressures are coming down on Dundas and Sherbourne particularly, to the point now that we are having great difficulty keeping some of the services. So
we're having difficulty keeping the housing, too,
keeping
I understand.
Keeping the housing, exactly.
The Riverdale plans cut the housing on site by 1,000,
yeah,
and apparently plan to reestablish those somewhere else. So the housing budget's being used to shuffle housing around. It's not even being used to expand it.
Yeah, the plans for Regent Park, which you know have been in the works for a number of years now, for many of us are quite disturbing, because what had been historically, since the turn of the century, had been a poor area, And we're talking about the old Cabbage Town, which was torn down to set up Regent Park in the late 40s and early 50s. So the character of the neighborhood now with what they're doing is going to totally change. The intention is to give land to condo developers, and I think out of the 5,000 units that were there, only 4,000 are being promised, and we don't know if that's going to change or not.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, they're going to double the density in the area.
Cut the social housing.
Yes, and cut the social housing, and also bring in a large number of condos, all in the name of mixed neighborhoods. And I'm not a big advocate of mixed neighborhoods. If we were serious about mixed neighborhood, we should begin then to go look at areas like Rosedale and Mount Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we should begin to bulldoze some of those houses down and make sure that poor people live there also.
Mm-hmm. So mixed buildings where some suites rent for market and some suites rent for subsidy, not on your agenda?
Well, it's the big theme right now. But this so-called mixed neighborhood policy, which for me, whenever I see it implemented, is always primarily implemented in poor neighborhoods, right? That land right now where Regent Park is sitting, once they've done that, once they bulldoze that over and change the character of that land, it will make the value of everything around it, all the land around it, that much more attractive to people, to the point where a place like All Saints Church, which is at corners of Dundas and Sherbourne, would, like many of the churches in the neighborhood, look at selling their property so that they could get the money for the land, because it's not a rich church, right?
The city passed a bylaw that social housing can't be diminished in the number of suites, but instead what's happening is it looks like a lot of money is being expended to spread it out, to root it out of the east and downtown Toronto, and to rebuild it or to pay out to private landlords for subsidy housing elsewhere in the city.
No, you're right. Many of the units at one time were protected. Rental units were protected under an act. Basically, you couldn't, if you had a number of rental units, you weren't allowed to tear them down without replacing them. So the city actually had to break its own bylaw to say, you know, that we're not going to build as many rental units in Regent Park. And more importantly, there was no indication as to where these other 1,000 units would eventually be built, or if they would be built at all.
And no way to tell which of them are new which of them are equivalents.
I have no way. It's a shell game. I actually encourage people to come down, because you can see actually these big machines tearing down apartment buildings. Some of them were 3 stories, some a little higher, some 8 stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see them being turned down.
You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM while we take a short break from our interview. Thank you. You're listening to Housing Advocate and shelter worker Gaytan Eru. Tell us why SCPMI funding is so important to the shelters and housing today.
When Mayor Miller, I think it was a couple of years ago, introduced his new Streets to Home policy, which is the new city policy. I don't know if people remember this, but it was at the beginning of the year, and the first thing they did was they removed everyone from Nathan Phillips Square. There was some, at one point, up to 100 people that were actually staying in and around Nathan Phillips Square.
Yeah.
They again enforced the bylaw, and along with that, they promised 1,000 units of housing each year.
Right.
We haven't seen that housing. We're talking now that the city should have had close to 2,000 or 3,000 units built, and they're nowhere near that.
You also mentioned the closure of agencies in the area as well, and which seems to go, I mean, in a crude way, it seems to go hand in hand with the dispersal of housing. But the closure of agencies is much more sudden and much more dramatic, isn't it?
Well, it's dramatic in that the services that some of these agencies offer are basic needs services. So, for instance, the drop-in hostels, winter relief. So I'll just take you through some of the things that right now that we're coming to grasps with. So the All Saints Church has announced that it'll be closing. It's one of its drop-ins. There are actually two drop-ins there, but one of them they're planning to close. And Council Fire has been offering hostel services to people in the area as far back as 1970. They actually started in their service in the All Saints Church and moved from there.
Yeah.
They're not reopening this year. And then we're hearing from the United Way, which has been offering winter relief programs, which came into existence around the late 1990s.
On days when the temperature dropped a little.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of a cold weather kind of services. So, and they're saying that next year they want to go in with the program that the city has, which is the Streets to Homes. They probably will not be offering these services next year.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we need more of this stuff than not less of it. We're actually are losing a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
At Dundas and Sherbourne, many of us who work in that they're definitely not a solution. But until we've dealt with the housing and the income issues, people need to have a shelter. People need to have food.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these debates were, you know, from what I'm seeing right now, we're going on the Fredericton Center or Fredericton Mission way back when it set up 100 years ago. The corner of Jarvis and Queen, and these kinds of debates were going on back then. These services save lives, we know that.
Yeah, when it's too cold to live and there's nowhere to go, you die. It's really not rocket science.
Yeah. Actually, in 1998, the city declared a national disaster and demanded that the federal government help out because they couldn't deal with all the issues that... I think there was three men that froze to death in 1996.
So we got Skippy.
So we got Skippy. We got the national funding that not just Toronto, but the cities across Toronto, large urban center, and some of the smaller cities got. And that is threatened right now.
Yeah.
That, all of that funding, $400 million over a period of 3 years. The project was rent for 3 years, and it was renewed for another 3 years. But the last installment was only for a year, and now there's no commitment for any funding at all.
Worse than that, I understand the funding may expire in March, but that the agencies who depend on it are going to have to start preparing to let people go.
Yeah, and I don't know if people read the paper today, but the story is starting to come out right now, and it's going to start today. And it's also, there's a big event planned for September 12th across Canada, and one of the events is in Toronto to bring out and to say that we need this money. But
September 12th, it's Trinity Square, right?
Exactly.
Behind the Eaton Center.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. And just for who is listening today that we're doing the interview, today's star is the September 8th star on Friday. Yeah.
And also, again, just to put a context to what has been happening over in the neighborhood for the last 10 years, and it's important for people to know that in 1993, the federal government got out of the housing business. They made major changes to the way that they gave out money to the provinces.
Mm-hmm.
What they call the CAP program, I forget what the CAP stand for, was eliminated. And then we saw soon after that, you know, major cuts in all the provinces. And in Ontario, the house government was some of the worst that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And those cuts and those changes still exist, right? So
mm-hmm.
just to give you a sense of what that means, it means that in 1995, before Harris made those cuts, people were receiving about $633 on welfare
mm-hmm.
for one person. Today, under McGuinty's government,
mm-hmm.
the likes of Kennedy and Smitherman,
mm-hmm.
People are receiving about $536
mm-hmm.
a month. So nothing has changed.
11 years later.
11 years later. Though some people might get the sense that because, you know, we now have a Liberal government, that things at Dundas and Sherbourne have changed. The reality of people who live there continues to be the same.
Worse, because social housing, now there are like hypothetical units. We're losing 1,000 units right now at Regent Park.
Yeah.
And sometime in the future, we may get them back, but we won't know where or when or how many. So in fact, if we're to believe that the city's maintaining the level of social housing units, we're counting units that aren't there.
The existing stock that they have is getting older and older. So all of the housing now that the federal government and ultimately the provincial government has downloaded to the city, they are responsible to maintain now, right? So And we've heard that there are serious problems in terms of the amount of money that they'll need to maintain that housing.
Right.
So the danger now is that eventually that housing will be sold off or right?
They'll
argue that we
it's uneconomic.
Exactly. And I mean, that's kind of the argument that's being given to Regent Park, right? We can't afford to upgrade these apartments. They're 50 years old. This is the way to do it. So I think we're going to see more of that. And in our neighborhood, what we're seeing is a place like the Canada House. I think it's been closed for a good 8 years, maybe longer. I'm not too sure exactly. It used to have rooms above. Like, I think the Canada House used to have 20 to 30 rooms above there. It's shut down. So those rooms disappear. So there's a whole bunch of low-income housing for single adults that has disappeared or is disappearing, and that's causing havoc.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we had guys that used to come to the drop-in, sleep in the drop-in all day long, and go and do
work.
You know, security work at night, right?
Yeah.
And then they would come back the next day, again, try and sleep all day long, and eventually they crash. They can't survive.
Why?
Well, it's just impossible. It's hard enough. It's hard enough doing that kind of work, having a home and you know, having a place where you can shower and lay down when you're tired and rest. It's hard enough to do that kind of work, period.
Yeah.
If you add, you know, the problem of not having a place to store your clothes, and you have to eat, you have to wake up to eat. It's not too complicated to figure. People can figure out pretty quickly that if you're going to stabilize people, you're going to have to deal with these things.
One of the things that you mentioned people can do is this September 12th Cross Canada Rally,
yes.
One of which is at noon at Trinity Square,
exactly,
behind the Eaton Centre. We have possibly three elections coming up in the next year, starting with the municipal one. What should people do?
In terms of the city's policies around homelessness, their policy is tied to the Streets to Homes issue, and there are two kind of prongs to it. It's called the carrot and stick approach, right? So you approach and you offer people housing, and then failing that, then you use the police to remove them from wherever, right? So that's, and we're seeing a lot of that happening in the parks, and cops coming to people and saying, actually, just recently we had a really, really high profile Chris Gardner, who removed from the Gardner by the city under the Miller regime, and I think there were some 60 cops that morning and a bulldozer and city officials and streets to homes people there ready to remove Chris from his home.
Right.
But the big problem around also the housing of people is that the amount of money that you get for welfare, which is $325, people are being housed in the northern end of the city sometimes, an hour away from the downtown core. Once they've paid their rent, they might have $20 to $30 left to survive on.
Right.
And those issues aren't being addressed. So when you say, you know, what can we do in terms of municipality, we need the municipal government to really, really fight to make sure that people have enough income. And they have to speak out. But unfortunately, Miller and City Council are not talking about the problem of people not having enough money to eat on social assistance. They're really, really dependent on the federal government right now for what we call infrastructure money, right, to build roads and the TTC. So if they begin to try and raise this issue, they don't feel they can.
Yeah.
You're not hearing politicians asking for those kinds of changes. So what we've had is the abandonment of a large, large sector of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, and that's proven true by these major cuts to housing and welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to that, what we've been given, and this is, you can see this on the news every day, the largest budget of the city is the police budget.
Mm-hmm.
We have situations where we have major operations, the latest one just at the beginning of the year in Jamestown, where Over 600 police officers went in, at 5:30 in the morning, raided Jamestown, which is a housing project, I think, in the north end of Toronto, made over 100 arrests, busted through doors, took, people out of there, took them to jail, but never really addressing the essential problems, which is, where's the work? What do our kids do? We don't have the services to make sure that our kids stay out of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the real dangers, is that as we move further and further away, and as more and more people are abandoned to poverty, the response is the use of force to control the social unrest that has to occur.
Well, sometimes and the use of force begets force, too.
Yeah, and sometimes it's organized protests. Sometimes it's people and communities organize, and that force is used against protests and demonstrations and stuff.
Yeah.
But often that social control of neighborhoods like Dundas and Sherbourne and Regent Park, Jamestown, Jane and Finch, Parkdale, often that shows itself in a daily kind of like use of intimidation and harassment and often beatings of people. Our end of town, East Downtown Toronto, has the history of Cherry Beach. Poor people being taken down to Cherry Beach and beaten up by the police.
Oh.
The most famous case being the case of Thomas Kerr, which happened in 1996, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And, a whole platoon from 51 Division was involved. They were suspended. There was the largest investigation in the city of the police history that was done. I think it lasted about 6 months.
Yeah.
No charges were laid in the end, but Thomas Kerr did manage to sue them successfully. They settled.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years later. So these are the kinds of things that we're seeing in a neighborhood. We're seeing people who are living in very, very dire straits. They're destitute, and we're seeing this on a daily basis. It's not unusual for us to see this new initiative, TAVIS. I don't know if you've heard the new TAVIS initiative.
But no.
It's a program that's going through 30 communities about once a month for 3 or 4 days, and they show up in force, and they basically, for me, they just intimidate, harass, and
who's they?
The police. It's the TAVIS project.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're seeing a lot. We've seen over the years a lot of that kind of activity in the neighborhood, and it's meant for them. It's their answer to. And there are serious problems in terms of people feeling safe, and in terms of the whole issue of the drug issue, in terms of what it causes, the havoc that causes. But you can't. It's impossible to address that through policing.
Well, let's address it at the ballot box in November.
Yes. Well, in order to do that, we need to have politicians who are willing to do that.
We need people to step forward.
Well, we need people to have that platform. At the grassroots level, we have to create an environment and we have to create a political will where these politicians are forced to address this issue. So the whole issue of the Skippy money, for instance. The initiative to hold this event and to talk and to demand that this money stays, although the city is involved and has called it, the push came from the community, right? The push came from us down, from people who were receiving this funding and for people who were accessing this funding,
yeah.
Saying, this is really, really, really dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
And my guess is, and this project, I think, is a 10 to 15-year phase before it's all done. My guess is by the time it's finished, many of those politicians who made the decision to tear down Regent Park will be long gone, and there'll be very, very few people to sit down and watch whether or not that social housing will actually be constructed and how much of it will stay. Basically, at Dundas and Sherbourne right now, people are fighting for their lives.
Thanks, Gaytown. I wish you luck in your work and in preserving the agencies that are so important to your neighborhood down there and East End, downtown Toronto.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeff, for talking to me, too.
We'll talk to you again.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to housing advocate and shelter worker Gaytan Eru. Tell us why Skippy funding is so important to the shelters and housing today. Thank you. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.